welcome aboard our vessel. I'll be your captain. Join me and my trusty ally, the cook, as we set sail through our relationship with music, film, literature, and everything in between, as well as our ongoing exploration into mental health and well-being. Anchors up.
Okay, Bryn, we're back. And yeah. I feel like we're treating shipmates a lot lately because we're really mixing up these episodes, aren't we, as we're going along? And we'll explain a little bit why in a minute. But firstly, as always, we do like to review our challenges, really, don't we? So we like to talk about what we've done. Obviously, again, we encourage shipmates to send in, you know, if you did have a go at any of our challenges from previous episodes, because it's, you know, it's nice when we get some pictures sent in or we just get some nice comments around the challenges. And Bryn's mentioned it, it's the favourite part for a lot of shipmates, isn't it, Captain? So please let us know how you're doing. But your one, I remember your face when I set this. And the video, by the way, was brilliant. And it's, again, very brave to put it out there.
I look very angry.
You do. You look very angry when you're doing something that's meant to be very relaxing. But yeah. Tell people about your Tai Chi experience.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think, personally, it wasn't for me. I don't know whether, maybe because I did it at lunchtime indoors. That might have been one thing. You know, it was just a very busy week, so I had to almost find the space to slot in rather than actually try and, want to do it, I guess. It's like, I need to do it. And also, I know you challenged me to find out a little bit more about Tai Chi. And it's also known as shadow boxing, and it's one of the major branches of traditional Chinese martial arts. And it does, like, they've got a few key components, and that's sort of around relaxation, grounding, presence, stance, structure, spirit, and intent. But the interesting thing for me was I did like an introduction, sort of 10-minute one. It was very similar to something which I did in university by Jerzy Grotowski, and he set up almost principles of movement. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, so when I do, I'll let people know. And that was all about meeting resistance. So where Tai Chi is a lot of flow, this was like you were pushing a boulder and it was really exerting the force. And I think that's something for me where I benefit a lot from meeting resistance, even if it's perceived.
Yeah.
So, I'm a Tai Chi master now, aren't I? I think. I don't know. You know, like a Pokemon master. You give it a go. I want to be the very best, like no man ever was. speaking of growth, you know, and like development and stuff, how's the plant? Is it dead?
like anything. Well, finding a space to slot it in like you in a busy week was the hard part. What I decided to do was go out and get houseplant for the new office that we're going to decorate. So I think working from home has posed a challenge for a lot of people. And currently, Sarah sometimes ends up working some days from home. She only works part-time, so Wednesday to Friday. And we can both end up on the dining table at times. And then if I've got a call, because I don't want to disturb her, I'll nip upstairs. We haven't really got space to do it, so I'm sat on the end, like, end of the bed or whatever. It's just really impractical. So we thought, well, we'll kick things off by buying a house plant. And then when we get our desk, which we have singled down to the desk we want, that'll be like nice to go on there. So we just want to get some other things, like some pictures of Nora and stuff to go around it. But I thought, I've never actually looked after a house plant before, other than when I was a kid, when we used to grow cress. I remember growing cress when I was in school.
Egg and cress sandwiches.
I think that's just a nice start to what the office will hopefully become. But we did say we've got a belter lined up, haven't we, actually? Says that sending a late night message on a Saturday doesn't lead to positive
doesn't
things?
Lead to so positive
explain,
things, yeah.
Explain to the listeners.
I mean, we're very fortunate to have this person. I do it randomly. I just reach out to people just to see if people are interested in the podcast, you know, and most people reply, who's this? How do you get my number? But, you know, it's fine. we're both pretty excited, actually, to have this person. I said, should we just get her on?
Yes.
So, Aaron, we're inviting on our next special guest, aren't we, today?
We are very excited. We are very excited. So it's a bit of a challenge for us. We were just saying it's the first one who's not our friend and quite remind us yet. So yeah. We'll see how this goes.
It's like a vetting process almost. So, obviously, you know, I mean, we've had Tom and we had Nick, and you know, they had some pretty impressive things on their bio. And I don't know, I think we might have a longer one. I think this person might be involved in more things than both of them put together. It's quite impressive. So we have today an award-winning theatre and film producer who made a career pivot in lockdown, qualifying the Wine and Spirits Education Trust Level 3 with distinction in both theory and blind tasting, and launching her own wine consultancy with a nod to the god of theatre and wine, Bacchus and Brody. Since launching the company in January, she's worked with events companies and private clients to curate and source the perfect wine, and with wine companies and distributors hosting tasting webinars, Instagram TV lives, and social media takeovers. She's also City AM's wine columnist with a readership of 2 million, as well as co-creating and co-presenting YouTube and Instagram TV show Boozy and the Beast, How to Drink Better. A slightly irrelevant, amusing, but ultimately helpful take on the grape. She's worked with Bright Trip, affiliate of Lonely Planet, to create and present a course on visiting vineyards across the globe, and has been interviewed by rugby legend Joe Marler on his podcast, The Joe Marler Show. Coming soon is her three-part wine and food pairing episodes with the People's Choice Awards and the launch of Number 9 Supper Club with Green Room Distillery. Informal but informed, her approach is all about accessibility, removing the misleading snobbery that can surround wine, and guiding people in understanding their own personal preferences, which, after all, is what this drink is really about. I'm going to take a breath and I'm going to invite our special guest to introduce herself.
Hi, I don't know how to follow that, quite frankly. My own introduction just doesn't so well. I'm Libby Zietzman Brody, and it's a real pleasure to be here with you both.
Yeah, that's amazing. You know, like, to be fair, and we know Nick and Tom, this is rubbish in comparison to that. I'm just gonna let them know now. All right, like, when you hear the word 2 million in readership, it's just a bit like, it just overtops everyone else. So you've already won in my eyes. But yeah, thanks for coming on. It was, you know what? Bryn and I were talking about how this comes about. And it's funny because you asked us how the pod started. We've talked about it on previous pods. But just a chance message from Bryn really to you. And here you are. And we're just so grateful to have you on. So what made you, you know, really come forward? I know Bryn asked, but what made you say yes, I suppose, really, to coming on?
Well, I generally think that saying yes is what I do. My general philosophy in life is just to say yes to stuff and then figure out how to do it afterwards. And that's probably been how I worked always, all of my life. I think it's all about embracing the opportunities you have and engaging with people. If people want to meet you, it's nice to meet them. Accused is probably the wrong word, but people say, oh, you're really good at networking. And I think that's a double-edged sword. And I think people can think that means you can be quite sharky or, you know, you're out for yourselves. But actually, I am, but because I genuinely like people, I like meeting new people. I like talking to people about what they're doing in their life and what they're up to. And I generally make good connections and stay in contact with them. So, you know, you said I'm not your friend, but that's a yet. Yeah. So I think it's a really important, well, as my song says, you know, you may as well go with it.
Yeah, and we're looking forward actually to that, Bryn, aren't we? Bringing it actually for your perspective. As soon as Libby said what she was bringing and the kind of subject she was going to talk about, you were very excited, weren't you, mate?
Yeah, I mean, it's a genre I'd never thought you'd allow me to do, to be honest. So, because I think there's always the danger of me wanting to sing or, you know, really, really just going with the flow. And people know I can't sing. But anyway, if it happens, it happens. Go with it, as we say. But yeah, so Libby, obviously you mentioned the you've mentioned the lyrics. So yeah, what's the lyric? What's the song you've brought for us?
Okay, well, the first song that popped into my head, and it's a classic. I'm very glad you're being allowed to do this genre because it's an important one. Obviously, my background is a theatre producer, and it's a musical track sung by legend Barbra Streisand, and it's Don't Rain on My Parade, which, as we were just talking about, is kind of like the original Swift. It's sort of the original take on haters gonna hate. Mm. You just do, you do you. Haters gonna hate, you do you.
Yes.
And it's unapologetic and it's upbeat. And if ever I am striding down the street, that's probably the track that I'm listening to buoy me up.
In between like meetings, someone's just wound you up and it's like, right, stick Barbra on, off I go.
Exactly. I start doing the shoe shuffle.
Yeah. Pretending you're sort of strutting around. She was from like Brooklyn. She's from some like, you know, she's had to fight her way through, isn't she, I think?
And yeah, I haven't. I'm from the roughs of Surrey, so we're not quite the same.
But we can pretend.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like that meme, isn't it, where it shows that guy driving to work to his regular job, listening to rap and swears and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And thinking, you know, trying to live that life for a moment, I suppose. But also, is there any standout lyrics in there for you? Is the song in general, you know?
There is. Goodness. I mean, thank you for bringing this up. So basically, the whole song is very positive and proactive, which I think are two things that are, that I think are very important in living life, to be positive and proactive. And in fact, I did this, this is a slight segue, but I used to go back and lecture at my university. Lecture is a horrible word. Talk to the kids with a Z about, I was actually asked to talk about producing, how to become a theatre producer. And at the end of my talk, one of the tutors came up to me and said, it was more a sort of lecture on how to fail, like positively. Which I guess it was, but I was invited back to keep saying it because I sort of unashamedly, I don't get embarrassed very easily, was saying like all the stuff I tried and had gone wrong, because I think that's a really important thing to remember. There's a lot of pressure to be goal orientated and a high achiever. And what did you last do and what are you doing next? And I think actually lockdown in some ways, I'm going all over the place and I will get back to the lyrics, but I think lockdown in some ways ripped away many people's goals. And it was sort of like, what's your life? If you don't have, what's that next promotion, the next holiday, that next bigger home, that next trip, that next, you know, if you took all of that away, what is your present? Massive segue here. But I was sort of unashamedly saying, you've gone through school and university and you've been told that, you know, you've got an A star or an A or a B or whatever it was, and you've always got to keep achieving. Just so you know, when you go into the world, you are going to fail. Something you attempt is going to go horribly wrong. And as long as you're not a brain surgeon, that's all. But like, you know, it will be all right, you know. And in fact, it's all a learning experience, even when things are incredibly humiliatingly terrible. Anyway, so I feel the song is sort of very positive and proactive and sod it. Oh dear, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course you are.
Good, because I swear a lot. So, you know, it's sort of like, sod it. You know, if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. But I may as well try, because there's nothing worse than missing out. And in that sort of like, for yourself, not in FOMO, I'm not cool enough for that. But the two lyrics that sort of stand out for me on a mental health, a general health and my own things that are important to me, that sort of occurred to me in lockdown. One of them, I realised that one of my, because I think lockdown was a time for reflection, one of my key notes for me, key cornerstones, is integrity and being your word, which I think it's very easy to not be in a society where you can swipe left, or, you know, where most communication is done online, and you can be an entirely different person, and you can, you know, there's I do quite a lot of my work and communication on Instagram, and there's this idea that that could be quite inauthentic, but actually I found it to be, you can use it to be very authentically.
Yes.
You can just talk, you could do IGTV lives, it's in that moment and it's right there. People can see how you're living life. So integrity was very important. The line says, at least I didn't fake it. So even if it goes wrong, I didn't pretend to be something I wasn't. I didn't pretend that I was happy with the life I was living. She takes a risk and she takes a gamble. And I think that, meaning your word and being open about that sort of stuff is very important. When we stay silent on topics, it makes them shameful, a bit like we're sort of embarrassed about them. And this can be anything from going to therapy to having Botox to having a miscarriage, which is a film. I was recently done the festival circuit. I produced a film on miscarriage. And, you know, it's all these things that when you have them or it happens to a friend or everyone else goes, oh yeah, that happened to me too. And I'm like, why are we not talking about it then? Because I'm sort of like miscarriage, Botox, therapy. You know, I realize Botox is the fun one there. But yeah, I know people who don't tell their husbands that they get it. And I'm thinking, then it seems like it's shameful or you're doing something bad. Just be honest about how you're living your life. Because if you think it's wrong, don't do it. Yeah. And if you're happy with making that choice, then what the hell?
Yeah.
So that's my one of my lyrics. And the other one, which I think is really important, is and has definitely been something that I have struggled with in my life. I think being a personality that is quite warm and effusive, boundaries can be an issue. And that sort of self-preservation. And there's a line that says, who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? Mm. And this links to a great Eleanor Roosevelt quote, which is, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent.
Love that.
I think that, you know, I've gone through a lot of thought process of this being in, unfortunately, as we all know, lockdown led to a lot of domestic abuse and an increase in that, but it also meant a removal from potentially toxic relationships with friends, family, work colleagues, where you got that distance, that time to step away. And actually, it was lifting for a lot of people I know, myself included, to be away from people who do rain on your parade.
Yeah.
And if you take that away, just what you can achieve, because you're not wasting time being dampened by these drains. So those are sort of the two, for me, the two lyrics that sort of stand out the most. But the whole song's just bloody amazing.
Superb. Yeah. It is superb.
It's interesting, sort of. No, you're basically using all the words I use as a therapist there, with like authentic, in the moment, all those sort of things. And it's the one thing that stood out to me initially is when you were talking about the whole how to fail, you know, and actually saying, actually, it's okay to make mistakes. And that's a big thing which I find in, especially work for adoption and fostering, is letting the parents know that you only have to be good enough, you know, and it's really letting people know. I mean, it's a Winnicott quote, and I think I've said in almost every podcast so far that, you know, it's okay to get things wrong. You know, you're never going to be the best of the best, but so long as you're the best for yourself, you know, and you're the best for actually, this is who I am, you know. And it's, I mean, we go on, I am who I am, or I am what I am, you know, as we can have another song going in there, you know, and it's just
another great song.
Another great song.
The playlist is going to get better.
Yeah. And it's just a huge thing for me is being authentic. It is, you know, at least you didn't fake it. You know, everybody plays different roles in life, and throughout lockdown, I mean, I could argue that actually, yes, it's been tricky for some, but there's also has been the benefits of, oh, I don't have to play this role anymore. You know, I don't have to put on this mask in front of this person who actually I don't want to be around. I can just say, actually, I don't want to be around you, you know, and it can, there was the empowering moment. And there is also, you know, as we've seen, you know, as you mentioned, with domestic violence, with suicide, and those sort of rates are rising, you know, and it has been tricky. But again, it's, and this is one thing which I think me and Aaron are both passionate about, is removing that taboo. You know, we've done a low, you know, suicide seems to be a theme that comes up a lot, partly because it's the area I work in, but also just with so many artists, you know, that they do decide to take their life as well.
Definitely. Yeah, it's so interesting. I think, like, there's loads in there. I think the authenticity bit we talked about before, and we always find that artists who stick true to themselves and come across authentic, it just sounds so much better as well. So like with Barbara Streisand, she from Brooklyn, she actually used her accent to go out there and you know, sing it a certain way, perform a certain way. They asked her to change her, like, her nose. Do you know what I mean? They asked her to have cosmetic surgery on her nose. And she's like, no, I'm going to use it. It's going to be my, you know, my feature, and something that sets me apart from other people. I love that she said, and I'm going to go, we'll go into some other stuff later, because she does loads, you know, in standing up for different sort of minority groups and things. But just the little bit about failure, like, I went to university twice, never finished a degree, dropped out, just was too scattergun at the time. I've done so many different jobs until I found my path in life as well, from like stacking shelves to filling freezers to doing delivery driving to all sorts of stuff, you know, until we get to, I won't tell you about the After Dark stuff, Bryn, I'll only tell you that offline. No, there's nothing there, Libby. But, you know, it takes you a while sometimes to fail and find your path as well, doesn't it? And I think it's really, really important that, you know, you've said that. Now, from your past in the theatre, though, and I know you're very passionate about this. You mentioned it when you were talking to us in your emails. So women in theatre, you know, yeah. I'm sure you've got a lot of friends still in there. And you mentioned about lockdown, that affecting. So what's your thoughts and feelings on women in theatre as in the current climate as well, I suppose?
I think theatre's had a terrible, terrible time of it. Live events in general have. It's still, I don't really understand why you can have crowds at a football match, mm-hmm. but not a socially distanced theatre. But then I think football is the opiate of the masses in many ways, you know, and I'm not against football. I just feel like we need to even it up a little bit with those creatives who need to let loose as well. Because obviously it has been a huge blow for people's careers, morale, mental health, obviously. I had three shows that were due to be opening in lockdown, one international tour, one national tour, and one West End, which obviously all... I also had a kid. So I gave birth and then had that sort of weird year. I'm not sure if either of you have given birth, but it's a weird year and where you're sort of like trying to find your feet. And then I was really ready to, and I was working on these shows in the background thinking everyone's just thinks I've taken a year off, but actually I'm going to announce all these shows. And then in March was my son's first birthday. And that was when I was going to announce the shows. And 2 days later, we were in lockdown. So all the shows just folded, just stopped. Wow. Went into an indefinite limbo, and you thought it was going to be weeks, and then it was months, and now one of them is going to go on in September 2022, and one of them is actually running in New Zealand, but it's all this sort of, I didn't even put that in the bio bit, but yes, all of that sort of stuff is still happening, but it has been a really, really, really hard time. Now, as for women in theatre, my point there is that I think the reason, women are statistically much more likely to buy the theatre tickets.
Yeah.
And was wondering why this is. And actually, if you look at the plot line of most musicals, 90% of them revolve around a woman's story and the women are active. And I think I sent my emails to you, you've got Calamity Jane, we're going old school. We're going back way back into the like 50s or 40s or whatever else. You've got her like gun-toting, drinking in a bar. And if you look at movies of the same era, you're mainly fainting. I mean, you're fainting, you're occasionally snogging James Bond. And later on, but you know, that's about it. And so if you watch a musical, you've got Tracy Turnblad, you know, not the ideal svelte Hollywood heroine, mm-hmm. but like breaking down racist barriers and dancing in the street. You've got Green Elphaba defying a dictator and saving her friends. You've got the Calamity Jane. You've got all these active women who are all singing, all dancing, charismatic, going through challenges in ways that actually traditionally, I know that is changing now, but in the film world, you really didn't have as many. If you looked at like 90% of the leading men, if you look on the top 100 films of all time, 90% of the leading roles are men. Whereas if you look at musicals, probably like 90% of the leading roles are women. So I think there is something very attractive and always has been about that. Again, I'm going to keep using this boring word, but proactive, this sort of proactive role that women were allowed, that wasn't always necessarily being the love interest. You know, romance is often in musicals. Of course it is. Mm. It's like, who doesn't love a bit of romance? But there's all this other part of it too.
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, it's noticing almost like it's still growing as well. Like you mentioned with the film and TV, I can remember when they announced there was going to be a female Doctor Who and the reactions that people gave to that. And it's like, oh, how can you do this? How can you change this stereotype? But I know, so I was lucky a couple of years ago, I went to see the new version of Company. And obviously they made the massive change of actually having a female lead to, you know, instead, you know, completely changing the script with that. But also you've got Six as well, which is an all-female cast, you know, and it's those sort of things which are really, I'm noticing really coming out a lot more, you know, and there seems to really be, I know Aaron found like a fantastic sort of project that's running at the moment that really seems to be empowering women, you know, in the theatre and really getting them out there.
Yeah, definitely. It was the Firebrand Theatre. Don't know if you've come across it, but I'll share. We always put stuff in the bio and people to read, and we'll put all the stuff that Libby mentioned today in the bio as well. We encourage people. But Firebrand Theatre, I was reading an article in the Huffington Post that was written, and it basically says, what if musical theatre was made for women? And it was by Harmony France. And then she basically went out and like Googled, you know, feminist theatre and things like that, mm-hmm. And said, no results, like nada, zilch, couldn't find anything. This is going back a few years ago, obviously, back in like 2017, I think. And then she went on and just developed Firebrand Theatre, basically. And the whole idea was, she went, basically, I just went out and hired women. You know what I mean? Like, where's the women electricians? Where's the women like writers, the creatives? And they make like a pledge. And I just love this bit. I'll just read this bit. I'll see what you think. But there is a world that exists in the minds of women, a world where women's stories and experiences are valued as highly as a man's. In this world, we no longer need to call ourselves a feminist musical theatre company because the word feminist is considered archaic and unnecessary. Until this world is fully realised, we will fight to employ and empower women on and off the stage by being vigilant in our programming, casting and process. How amazing is that? And it made me want to go and actually get involved with that. You know what I mean? And go and watch the show. I mean, they're based in Chicago, but yeah, we need more of that, don't we, Libby, basically?
We need a lot more of that. And I also, obviously it's not just theatre, it's in lots of industries, you always get this female put in front of a woman's career, you know, and there's, you know, this female CEO, this female wine consultant, this female doctor, and you've got this sort of, this word female, and exactly as you've just said, Aaron, that sort of, as they have said rather, that it would be wonderful to live in a world where we don't need to gender it because it doesn't matter. And I do think you have to name the issue. So I do think, because someone was saying, I was part of a conversation on LinkedIn about certain people saying, I'm going to drop female CEO or female from my bio, from my title. And I said, I agree. I like that idea. But I actually think you've got to be seen. This is my own personal take on it. Seen to be representing until it becomes 50-50 and it just doesn't matter. I think actually seeing out there that, I mean, so many of the world leaders out there are women. I mean, it should just be seen as completely normal. The fact that we have to make these sort of memes or videos or champion the fact that we have female leaders is to me slightly bizarre and sad. Like it's wonderful they're all out there, but are you basically saying that I was born slightly, backwards, because it's so great that you women can do all these things. We can. And I think a few friends sent me this amazing montage of videos of all the female leaders that we have right now. And it's, you know, from Merkel to Kamala Harris to, actually like every continent, basically all these female leaders. Yeah. And they were like, isn't this amazing? And I said, yes, but at the same time, someone's had to sit down and make that. Like, it's a thing.
Yeah.
That people of my gender are so impressive to have got to that level. And I'm like, no, most of the people I know are just, you know, male or female, are you good at the job? And women are also, you know, clever and savvy and can get the job done. It's really weird that we still have to make that a thing.
It definitely is.
But until it is normal, which it's not yet, sadly, I'm going to keep saying, you know, if someone asks me, in case it's not obvious, by the way, I'm a female. Yeah. It'll be very awkward and tasting. But I realise this is a podcast, no one can see me, but it's very obvious.
And I did all of these things. It went from your bio, weren't it? And I'm a female. Like, it's just, yeah.
And I'm a woman. It's amazing. I did this with a vagina. It's incredible. Who knew?
You've done a lot more than being Brent, put it that way.
Yeah.
How have you found, you know, it's interesting, I've got a little one, Nora, and actually wasn't born too far from your time, your child there. So yours was March. Say, what's their name? Sorry, so I should ask.
Yeah, March, 13th of March, Bowen.
Bowen, what a lovely name as well. Bowen, Welsh name. We're going to definitely bring Bowen. Yeah. My daughter's called Nora, by the way. So she was born in August 2019, and a lot of her formation in her early years has been in lockdown. How have you found like managing all that as well? Because for me, I've gone from being on the road in my job the one benefit of lockdown has been I've had to be at home since last March. I've been able to watch all the development points and really be present in those moments where I might not have been. But yeah, how have you found that? Because I'm always interested to ask other parents their experience as well of raising in lockdown.
I think it's actually been incredibly, I think there's not many other years that a child changes so much as their first couple. I mean, the growth, the development is insane. And actually both parents being around to witness that was an amazing thing. My husband does say he thinks it must be tough on a lot of dads traditionally, but people who are away from that, just not really having an option, because particularly he works in a sort of city hours job, you'd be coming back later than the kids asleep and you'd miss all of this stuff. Yeah. And now things are opening up. I've spoken, and again, I have to say particularly to my male friends, they are male friends, that tend to have the city jobs, particularly when the baby is younger and the women tend to stay at home. This is a generalization because I actually have a number of friends where it's the other way around.
Yeah.
But in that generalization, they're going back to the city, or they're going back to the office hours, and they're suddenly realizing that they're not seeing their kid every day. They might see the kid once a week, at the weekend, and how much their kid has grown and developed in that time and what they've missed. Now, personally, I found it wonderful because we got to go 50-50 on the childcare time. Mm. And that allowed me the time to retrain doing my WSETs and start my consultancy, because obviously theatre had sort of gone into limbo. Film was still ticking along, but theatre was in limbo. So my husband was able to spend 50% of the time. We did 24 hours off and 24 hours on. We basically took it from lunchtime nap to the evening, and then you get up in the morning and then put him down for the nap, and then the other one would take over when you woke up from the nap. So you did 24 hours to do your own stuff, and that worked quite well.
I love that. And you were segueing again then, weren't you, to your wine taste and stuff? I can see where I felt like I was moving again then.
Hard to pin down. Sorry. Yeah.
No, and it's a big thing for me where I've noticed sort of with parents and working parents, just the difference in the attachment building stage as well, having both parents around, especially. And it is, we say traditionally, the father goes to work, and it is the other way around sometimes, but just the role of having both parents there and the security the child then gets is massive. But I do want to touch on, we are segueing and we are going, and obviously me and Aaron, we would pretty say we essentially met in a pub. It's start of a beautiful romance. And and for me, I really noticed the impact of actually lockdown and not being able to go to the pub and not having that social time. And and now sort of with the older generation where that was what they did, you'd have people who lived on their own and they'd go and they'd have one pint all day, but they'd sit and talk to people. And obviously you made the great career pivot, during lockdown, to move into, wine and spirits and that sort of area. And it's just wondering, A, how was that, making that decision? But also, sort of your thoughts when it comes to sort of, I guess, alcohol and mental health, because it can be a taboo as well, where people are like, oh, no, but actually,
it's a very tricky line. When I say things like I make it accessible for everyone, obviously not no one that's in AA or underage. That's so obviously there is a, now I think that I have not always been a very good drinker. And by that I mean I love a drink, always loved a drink.
Same.
Loved it. But you don't understand. I once had a birthday party, segueing again. Sorry. I once had a birthday party where literally they went around the room, all these people were saying, like, how do you know Libby? And literally every single person's story was at some point, they all met me drunk at different parties or events. I was like, oh, I'm not sure if this is a great bonding moment. Yeah. Who hasn't bonded with someone exactly just like you guys? You meet, it's a very convivial social thing. Now, when it comes to mental health, not always a brilliant thing. So you've got to learn, as with learning boundaries, as you've got to learn your own limits, something I'm still working on. But I will say that when you start learning about wine, or anything, I imagine, but for me, when I started learning about wine, it was about drinking with intention and attention. So it was, I actually wasn't just grabbing that glass of lukewarm white wine at the interval of an opening night in theatre and sloshing it back because it was free. I was then going, what can I taste it? What can I tell about, it's like playing detective with your glass of wine. You're sort of, what do I think the winemaker's done and why have they done that? And does this work? And am I picking up fruits or blossom? And would this go better with seafood or a steak? And I'm really thinking about it. So although, I do try to also do 3 days a week without booze, because it is quite important if you're in the world. I mean, we probably get about 6 bottles of wine delivered every day.
We can help, by the way.
Yeah, I'll help there.
Well, actually, I'm very popular with my neighbours because I do open it, have a taste for an article or a piece or an Instagram or whatever it is, or whatever I'm doing. And then I'll generally vacuum pump them and drop them off at neighbours. Because with a vacuum pump, which is like £8-9 online, you can keep your wine fresh once it's open for nearly a week or about a week. So I just vacuum pump them, drop them off at neighbours' doorways. I'm very popular. I just basically like me through booze.
Moving to Surrey.
We're on our way.
But I do think it's a tricky thing with mental health. I know friends who say, I'm also, don't ever push alcohol now. You know, if someone goes, I'm having the one glass, I might say, are you sure, when the glass is empty and I'm pouring other people's? But I'm not. Probably when I was younger, I was like, go on, have a shot. I'll have another shot. Come on. What are you doing tomorrow? And I think that that's really important. For a start, I'm not drinking wine to get hammered. I'm drinking it because I'm really appreciating the beautiful artistry in this most ancient of drinks. I have a whole new level of appreciation for it. Like when you buy a bottle of wine, that has taken that winemaker years.
Sometimes decades.
And I'm not talking about the older bottles, I'm talking like a new bottle. It takes 4 years to grow a vine in the hopes that it will bear fruit. And then you harvest it, you make or do whatever you want to do to it, oak or stainless steel or whatever you're trying to make. And then you've got to wait for it to be ready. Then you've got to taste it and see if your risks has paid off. I don't have patience for that. I have a lot of respect and admiration for that. But then you get like someone just grabbing it off the shelves and glugging it down without even tasting it. So I think actually learning about a subject gives you, with anything, the more you learn, the more you respect a topic.
Agree massively. You know, I was just going to say, actually, it's funny that you mention it, because I think Bryn mentioned to me when he sort of secured you as a guest, we were very excited. And I think you'd been in Lanark Vineyard around the same week as my anniversary, because I was there as well. I'd only been for a wedding before. So we did a wine experience. We stayed and bottle of wine in the room, then did the tasting. It's the first time I've ever done it. What I'm going to say to people now, because obviously not everyone gets a Lanark Vineyard and do that, if you listen to Libby's pod with Joe Marler and you're into this sort of stuff, you really do go into it. And I was so interested to listen to, and my wife's going to listen to it because we both love wine. But one thing you said in there, which I loved, there's a couple of things actually in here, but the first one was about tasting wine. And you were like, what can you smell? Right. And I remember when I went to Lanark, I was like, I can smell jam in this one. And then they was like, you're right. You know, that's what you can, you know, you probably can smell a bit of jam. I was like, jam in the wine? Anyway, there was another bit that you said about how people associate not just with what they can taste, but it's the memories as well, isn't it, of that, what that wine evokes. Now, for me, on a special occasion now and again, we'll get a bottle of Chianti. I'm not saying that special because of price, but just special because when my wife and I got married, we went to Florence on our honeymoon.
Oh.
So the wine of the region is Chianti. You couldn't, in my eyes, get a bad one when we were there, but you're an expert, I'm not. It tasted great to me. So when we have that, that's where I go. And when I still haven't been to many musicals, we did go to a very intimate opera show at this church there called St. Mark's. And they only let like 40 people in at a time. And the singers are like there, you know, and they're belting out these tunes. And we were given wine when we went in. It's the thing, obviously, particularly in Italy, you know what I mean? They've got such good wine in this region. So that really resonated with me, that drink take, like almost time traveling you to like another place. Just tell people your feelings of that. Because is there any, like when you think, oh, I have that bottle, that's where I am straight away. Do you know what I mean? Because I thought that was interesting.
Most of the stuff we taste, as you probably know, is actually what we smell. It's the senses are all connected. And they're connected to our memory pathways and our neurons and all of that. And that's why I'm trying to get rid of this idea of the snobbiness around wine, where when I work with private clients, I never write a tasting note of how a wine tastes. I'll write the winemaking techniques and the winemaker, but I won't write what I taste, because we're not the same in any way. My tongue is not your tongue. You know, my memories are not your memories. What I smell will not be exactly the same. I might smell apples. You might smell pears. They're very close. Who's going to say it's right or wrong? This is all about personal stuff. And absolutely, it connects to memories. So there might be wines that you really love, like Chianti, because it brings you back to that really happy memory of, I hope you have a lovely honeymoon. And then that moment of joy, it brings joy to your mind and palate. Whereas there might, someone else might have like, well, it's a bit like I could never have Archers again, because you might have a terrible experience with something and you never go near it. And I think that's like, I mean, it's entirely valid, and it's an entirely, I mean, obviously I can wax lyrical about wine, but it's an entirely personal experience. You know, people have spent decades creating it, but it's fundamentally what you're pouring out of that bottle, it's just for you.
Yeah.
And it's what tastes good for you, and what you, and if you know, there's no rules on that.
Love it. And Bryn, we loved the Boozy and the Beast stuff, didn't we? Oh, we were watching some of the other things you've done.
Yeah.
And we'll link people in. But yeah, just your thoughts, mate, on some of the things, because maybe it's obviously going into the mental health side stuff. And we talk a lot about this, don't we? Off air as well, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. One thing for me, where you mentioned about the memories and the memories of smell and stuff, and actually it sort of smell, and also, you know, with sound I work, and especially when it comes to working with elderly clients with dementia and things like that, you do find like a smell will suddenly bring back this memory, and they're instantly transported back. You know, they're instantly in this place, and this, you just notice them change, you know, and they just come to life in that age and where they are. And also, I mean, we've talked the same with music. You know, I mean, people listen to the Cabin Session where I talk about, you know, my own personal journey with grief and how music takes me to certain places, you know, and it really takes you back there. And I think people almost underestimate the power of our senses as well. You know, people just don't realize, actually, you know, my father-in-law doesn't have the sense of smell, and every now and again I'll say, oh, I can smell that bacon sandwich, and he's like, I can't smell it, you know. And it's that, the difference, you know, when you lose something, where you actually realize. But also, I use the typical therapist line of being aware of time, which loads of people love. And it's just sort of seeing, I guess, Libby, is there anything, you know, any lyric or anything that was burning there that you wanted to explore at the moment, you know?
The lyric, no, I mean, those are my top two. I mean, I think the whole, if I know we've gone, we've segued through this, Dan.
We have,
But no, for me, the overall song's message is one that I would hope everyone could reflect on, and maybe reflection is the opposite of it, but it's to just do it. To just, if you're thinking of, I mean, obviously within moral and legal boundaries, you know, not being like, you know, not going to promote necrophilia or anything, but like, I'm just saying, if there is something that you are thinking about, then what's the worst that can happen? Someone says no, big deal. Like, I mean, you have these heartbreaking moments in life, and please, I mean, I absolutely think there are very heartbreaking moments in life, but when they're not the really, really big stuff, when they're the sort of embarrassing level, or that went wrong, or I mucked that up, or they said no, or they didn't like my pitch, or whatever it is, those things fade so quickly.
Definitely.
So we spend so long worrying about these things that you just won't remember a year later.
Yeah, definitely.
So if it's not like the big, big stuff, then just, I mean, when I'm saying like, just do it, I'm not like, you know, I'm kind of bored with my wife, so I'm going to have an affair. It's not, I'm not going like, just do whatever you feel like.
Yeah.
That's not my message here. But it's more that if you are worried about the small stuff, don't be. If you're worried about what people think of you, don't. Like,
definitely.
It really won't matter. You're not living your life for them. I can't imagine anything worse than living a whole life not having done anything because I was worried about what other people would think of me, or worried about it not working, because loads of stuff hasn't worked that I've tried in my life.
Definitely.
And you just keep sort of throwing it. You just keep doing it. You just keep.
And it's okay. Like, and it's okay.
And it's okay.
Use it. Move on. Like, yeah.
I think I'm pretty happy.
You look happy. Have you been drinking today, Liv?
Oh yeah, I'm absolutely hammered. No, I'm actually joking. I haven't had a drink today. It's quite a gasp, shock. It'll be one of my days without.
And I think, as Aaron knows, I like to look up a lyric that fits to finish it, you know. And yeah, I think I had this one ready from the off when musicals were coming and a certain musical was mentioned. But also, Libby, I really want to say like a massive thank you for being so open, yeah, as well. You know, it's not easy coming on talking to two random people, you know, about journeys, about tricky things and stuff. But yeah, this one, just what you were just talking about just then, I thought, yeah, I've got the right one. I'll try not to sing it as well. Yeah, well,
go for it.
Carry on and sing it afterwards, but I haven't got the lungs for this one. I'm through with playing by the rules of someone else's game. Too late for second guessing. Too late to go back to sleep. It's time to trust my instincts, close my eyes, and leap.
Libby, just thanks for that. You know, that chat there was fantastic. Talking about segues, I think you are the queen of segues, by the way. You know, I think you manage that conversation better than me and Bryn manage like to run our own podcast. So we'll be listening back and learning some lessons from that. I did just say in between, it linked really nicely back to Nick, who we had on as a guest last time. He talked a lot about anger-gy, so using your anger for positive change and effect. And I think some of the things we talked about with the feminist theatre in there and some of the themes that you were talking about, like the miscarriage film and things like that, which we will link people towards. I think, like you said, it's really important to talk about that stuff. So thanks for coming on and being so open and sharing. However, we now take you over. The look on your face just now when we said this was amazing, but this is just a podcast. People can't see us, it's fine. Is our 30-second challenge. What we like to do when we get guests on, because we have to do it all the time and Bryn struggles, is get you to. Now, you're involved in a lot of things, so we've asked you to pluck out one thing.
No segues.
No segues. You've got to stay on track with this, Libby, all right? And Bryn loves to hold time, so I'm going to pass you over to Bryn's capable hands to lead you into it.
Perfect. And I don't know what, this was my idea, this whole segment, like from the off. I don't know why, because I just can't do it at all. But what I'll do is I'll count you down from three and then I'll let you know sort of 10 seconds and things. So we'll go in 3, 2, 1.
I'm obviously a wine consultant and communicator, and a major passion of mine is making that accessible and approachable and educational, but in a fun and irreverent way. So I'm probably mainly going to promote here Boozy and the Beast, How to Drink Better. It's a YouTube channel, and it's also on Instagram at Boozy Beast TV. We're basing myself and a very good friend, Robin Boot, who used to be a professional Robin player and is now a Lush. Basically, what was that? What was that? What?
10 seconds.
Fuck, sorry. Just check it out. It's really good.
Perfect.
Bryn, I thought that was on the door. Bryn, stop putting the guests off because you're crap at it. He's trying to make you go over time.
I'm just trying to make everyone go over time.
I thought that was like, stop. And I was
stop,
like...
Libby. You've said something really bad, Libby.
We can just leave it like that because I'm like, fuck it, it's good.
Yeah. We always say, though, we do give people time after. So never mind Bryn putting you off there because he's so embarrassed about his own timekeeping. We watched some of your videos and they are, I've got to say, they're so fun. They're so funny. So just tell people a little bit more about why they should get on YouTube and start watching these things. What's it all about for people?
YouTube or Instagram, if you're on either of those. Essentially, it all came about as mates, like you guys, you're just chatting. I was talking to my friend Robin, we've been friends since university, like many years now. And he was saying, how you talk about wine is so easy to understand and explain. And I don't feel like a moron asking any questions. And really simple little things that help you drink better, like the temperature your wine should be served at.
Yeah,
I thought I hated light reds like Beaujolais and stuff. I thought I didn't like them until I served them lightly chilled, and suddenly they're amazing and refreshing in summer.
Yeah.
And it's these sort of really simple tips and tricks that we were talking about. And he's now an actor and filmmaker, and he basically said, why don't we make these little 5-minute clips about handy tips and tricks on how to drink better that just anyone's going to find useful and interesting. And that's what we do. So it's Boozing the Beast, How to Drink Better on YouTube, or Boozy Beast TV on Instagram. But yeah, so definitely I've now massively gone over, but it's very important to do it without the snobbery. There's way too much mysterious stuff about wine. And you go to a supermarket and there's this aisle of this stuff that apparently is meant to be sort of like, there's these gatekeepers that are allowed to know about it. And we a good old stab at looking at what's on offer. And going to the top shelf if you're feeling fancy. And basically there are all these really simple things on labels that I've been drinking for over 20 years, not always legally. And I And I didn't know really easy stuff that's on those labels.
Yeah.
Me just enjoy my wine better. And if you're going to be spending £8 on a bottle of wine, you know, you want to be able to actually serve it nicely.
Definitely. No, I love that. And we urge people to go because I think from my experience at Clannock Vineyard, spending some time with somebody who knows what they're talking about, and you'll get that just from listening to your, watching your video, sorry, or listening to the Joe Marler pod, you will find more interest in. My wife and I thoroughly, we've never done it before. So when you're actually learning about it, like you say, you don't go gung-ho with wine then. You actually take some time to think, let's enjoy this, you know. Yeah. And you're not asking someone to have a degree to enjoy. Valley boy here, right? Yeah. Like, honestly, sipping my Chianti, darling, and knowing exactly what to look out for, you know. But it does make it more fun and enjoyable as well. So, yeah.
Please and get Welsh wines, guys. You just had Welsh Wine Week. I mean, Welsh wine is doing an incredible job right now. I mean, it really is probably one of the fastest, if not the fastest growing wine region in the world right now.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
That's exciting. I'm not moving, sorry.
Like in the last year, 5 new vineyards opened in Wales. You've got over 30. And the wine coming out of them, like Montgomery's amazing, White Castle's amazing, Lanark's obviously amazing. Anchor Hill, if you're cool and funky, if you like natural wines, they make huge steps to have like no carbon footprint, and their winery's made of like straw bales, has a living green roof. I mean, Welsh wine's incredibly cool right now.
Yeah, let's get Bryn, let's go.
I was going to say, we said we needed a tour, so I think that'll do. Okay, fab. So now it's time. Obviously, I've been sacked from trying to do my X Factor voice. So we decided we'd reach out to our shipmates. And this time we've got Charlotte introducing this next segment.
On our next voyage.
Fab. They're all better than mine anyway, aren't they? One day I'm going to surprise people and I will either get the X Factor guy or I'll actually do some voice training and I'll do it. But this is where we almost hand it over to Libby again as an opportunity to set both of us and also those who are listening. You know, if you've got time, we really encourage you to get involved in this section because a lot of people shared this, their favorite part of just actually taking some time for you, you know, and just having space. And yeah, so Libby, what's your challenge for us this week?
Okay. All right. So I look forward to hearing how this goes. I do want to know the details. So in the next week, you've got a week or whenever your next recording, but before that, there will be a moment of pause where something you hesitate before doing something. Okay. Not for good reasons, like I really shouldn't have that donut, but there'll be a moment where maybe it's a bit awkward or you're not sure if you should like enroll in that thing online or whatever it is. For you, there'll be a moment of hesitation and doubt. Do it anyway.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one. That's a proper one.
Yeah.
Just do it anyway. And I don't know whenever your next recording, but basically do it anyway. There will be that moment. And you're allowed in the challenge to go back to it because sometimes you're not mindful. I'm quite often not mindful. Mm. And you just carry on. So you might just go, no, but then catch yourself and go, wait.
Libby said.
Libby said, do it anyway. Again, within moral and legal boundaries.
Oh God, that strips away a few options. Yeah.
Oh no, that's fab. Yeah, thank you, Libby. And yeah, I'm sure we'll have fun explaining to each other how that's gone as well.
We'll probably have the on-air ones.
Yeah.
We'll have
the after dark then when we're not recording.
It's amazing. No, we'll give it our best shot, Libby. But it's probably a time for us to say a final thank you to you and a goodbye. And obviously we wish you the very best of all you're doing. And hopefully the theatre stuff starts to come back shortly as well. But yeah, you know, just thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thank you both so much for having me and for doing this really important podcast, I think, which is definitely something everyone should be listening to and getting involved with, particularly when we're coming out, hopefully, of lockdown.
So some of you may have noticed we we actually didn't bring the chapter in today. So we're going to continue with the story on our next voyage. But we really thought actually, you know, the stuff that Libby was talking about was so fab, and like we just couldn't break it down at all. You know, and a massive thank you to Libby for coming on and just being so open and engaging. And yeah, we'll share all her links, you know, for all her many different ventures, it seems. So please, you know, have a look, give her a follow, you know. And we're moving into, yeah, just a bit of an outro and just seeing. I know you've had some people get in touch.
Yeah, and I think as well, yeah, a thank you to Libby too, because honestly, I think she's the queen of segues, isn't she? I think we found out we were zooming from so many subjects, but to cover so much in such a short space of time really was amazing. So a huge thank you to her. Yeah, shout out. I think a lot of people, it's funny with the weather, isn't it? Weather's dipped a little bit recently and lots of people are catching up, and that happens in life. So we've had some amazing feedback. Sophie came back around Arctic Monkeys. I knew she was a big fan and she asked us to cover them actually. And she said like, she loved her shout out, but she also said she can remember the first time she heard them. She was sat in her nan's kitchen watching T4 on Sunday when they were number one. And she just thought, what a band. And she said, it's so right about songs holding memories. And we've spoken about that a few times now, haven't we? And songs can zoom you to certain places. So yeah, huge thank you to Sophie. And I understand you've had one or two as well.
Yeah, I think it's obviously mentioning, you know, we've had both Nathan and Owen have sort of posted their catching up. You know, I know Owen tends to link us with Call of Duty. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, whether inspirational, you know, as he's playing that game. But also Bonnie, I wanted to mention. So we had a message from Bonnie about the cabin session and said, you know, she felt it was authentic, helpful, you know, it was really well done. And she sort of shared just a little bit about her link to one of the songs. So Amazing Grace. So yeah, it's really just nice to hear that sort of stuff and hear that, you know, it's, I guess we're making a bit of a difference now and again, you know, it's having a bit of an impact on people.
Well, you know what, before, like, I've had a couple of messages from various people. I want to shout out to Dan. I'm just going to say his name, and he knows why I'm shouting him out, but I'm sending some strength to him. We've had some lovely messages from, we've said about connecting friendships in the past and putting people in touch with support for various difficulties. I know that we had a shout out from Nikki as well about hearing your episode and saying that it's encouraged her to get grief counselling. So again, that's a huge one. And that was on Twitter. We received that one. So I suppose I'll just give the links to people, Captain, in it, because we want that stuff to keep coming. And you can do it in a variety of formats. So Instagram, we love that, because if you can send pictures as well, please do. And you're happy. Yeah. We'll post them on the page. But that's at Captain and Cook Pod. At Twitter, we're at Captain and Cook One. So that's how Nikki got in touch. And on email, we're captainandcookpod@gmail.com. So a fab, fab episode. But until the next one, it is a ta-ra from me.
And it's a ta-ra from him.